You're listening to the Rockdown Podcast, the podcast that doesn't care how bands got their names. And now, direct from the Rockdown Studios, here is your host, Mr. Cheese.
Hello and welcome to the show. Today we are really pleased to be here with the incredible Mr. Joel Hoekstra of Whitesnake. Hello, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you taking the time out.
You are very, very welcome indeed. Now, we obviously mainly have a kind of rock and metal crowd that listen to the podcast, so probably most of them are aware of what you do. But for anybody who doesn't know about yourself, could you just give us a kind of a quick history of yourself and where you're from, etc.?
I grew up in the Chicago suburbs and just played with bands about there, and eventually stumbled my way out to LA when I was younger for a couple years, working. Went to GIT in a recording studio, back to Chicago, played with bands, and then ended up in New York to do a theater gig, and that ran for a couple years, a show about Janis Joplin, and really since then I've been in New York City. So that show closed, and since then, boy, I mean, it's a long story in terms of how I made my way up, but through the oldie scene, playing with the Turtles and Big Brother and the Holding Company, to kind of getting my feet wet with playing pit stuff in New York and then being in the Broadway show Rock of Ages. And oddly enough, through that old Jim Peterick tie in Chicago, playing in his band, joining Night Ranger. And I would say having Night Ranger and Rock of Ages led to Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And having Night Ranger probably led to Whitesnake. And just who I met along the way led to playing with Cher for a bit. And so, yeah, I've had quite the story, but just pleased to be moving forward and making a living with my guitar this many years later. So it's a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, again, we thank you for your time. And as I did warn you, the questions hopefully are very different to what you usually get asked. So
that's terrific. So you're not going to ask me what's my favorite? What's your favorite?
No, we're not going to ask you we're not going to ask you how bands got their name or anything like that. So
all right.
Okay. So, what is the best and worst purchases that you've ever made?
Best purchase is probably my 57 reissue Gold Top Les Paul.
Wow.
Which I adore and is really my main guitar. And worst purchase was probably back in the day, I'd say my entire guitar rig that I played when I was younger, playing a Roland GP8 into a GK250ML. It was a tone with a lowercase everything.
But presumably it did at least help you get to where you are now. So I suppose it
yes. It helped. Yeah. But somebody really should have pulled me aside and said, Marshall, kid, buy a Marshall.
Brilliant. So outside of music, what are you most passionate about?
I'm such a normal guy outside of music. I like just watching movies, and I like sports. I like basketball and baseball are probably my two favorites. And I follow, being from Chicago, I follow the Chicago Bulls and the Chicago Cubs. So that's kind of a nice little pastime for me. A little bit of exercise. There you go. That's kind of about it. I don't really have a huge hobby outside of music.
Okay. Yeah, that's cool. And do you actually kind of do any sports, or is it purely a kind of a watching?
No, I enjoy playing basketball. I get out there. I tried to give up playing real games for a bit because I was always worried about breaking a finger.
Yeah.
So I talked myself out of that for a while. When I was younger, I was pretty diehard. And that time back in Chicago, I used to teach guitar quite a bit. I had 6 days a week I would teach. And almost every day I would go to the YMCA after that and play basketball before I'd head home and work on music again or whatever, or watch a movie. But
yep.
So during that time, I played a lot of it. But I jammed a lot of fingers back then. I could always make it through a teaching day, though, with a jammed finger. Right. I don't think I could make it through a gig.
No, absolutely. Mentioning kind of injuries, is there any kind of, what's the kind of worst injury you've had, whether it's been kind of stage related or just life related? What's the worst thing that you've had happen to you?
I had last year at the end of the Trans-Siberian Orchestra tour, and really, I guess about halfway through the tour, I developed some tendonitis in my right elbow. That was bad. Ooh. It was like, you know, us musicians were babies. I mean, it was really just tennis elbow, but it was extremely painful. I would go to anytime I had to straighten my arm out, it basically hurt. So that it became the type of thing that felt like it was actually holding back how well I could pick and things like that. So.
Yeah.
Kind of painful, kind of a pain in the ass thing to deal with in the middle of a tour.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine. I can imagine. So again, a complete tangent. What would be your perfect vacation?
Well, I like sun. I like the sunshine. I like warm weather. So anything with that, where there's maybe a basketball hoop and shoot some baskets, any place with good coffee, coffee, sunshine, shoot some baskets, watch some movies, simple stuff, man.
Yep.
Anywhere where I could do that. So any warm climate.
So you sound incredibly down to earth, which leads to a question that I haven't actually kind of got in my stack, but I know it's something I've asked before. So are you kind of spiritual, and do you believe in karma?
Yeah, I would think to a degree that's proven, right? I mean, what you put out comes back to you. Maybe not immediately, but I think you could make the most simple, oh gosh, I'm going to have poor English here on this. I'm so sorry. But I think, let's say you go up and you're mean to somebody. Well, what's their first inclination? They're going to be mean back, right?
Yep.
Or at least to be defensive. And if you're nice to people, people tend to be nice to you. So I think that's kind of a simple thing. I mean, believing in karma seems to be like logical to me.
Yeah. Well, funnily enough, I was had Billy Sheehan on the show last night, and we were talking about the fact that that if you do go looking for revenge, that you have to dig two holes.
Oh yeah, very good one. Yeah, good analogy. Yeah, I think definitely it's a certainty in life that what you put out comes back to you.
Yeah. Definitely. So this, again, doesn't necessarily relate to music, but do you have any good luck charm?
I'm not particularly superstitious with that stuff. I'm trying to think if I have... I can be a little OCD about things on gig days, like the way things need to be, and like, you know, I need to do things in this order, and this is how I like to do things. But as far as good luck goes, no, not really. But I would say I'm superstitious enough, if people consider it a superstition, to pray a bit before every gig and be like, you know, dear God, please let this go well. Please help me to play the best I can, you know. So depending on people's beliefs with that, that's perhaps a good luck thing in some people's eyes. But for me, I look at that like it's an actual spiritual connection, but that's up to people.
Right. Yeah. This is a sort of a tangent, but I presume at some point along the way, you must have shared the stage with Ryan from Soil.
No, I don't believe so.
Oh, really? Oh, I assumed you. The reason that I just thought of that is a few weeks back, we were talking about exactly this topic, and he was telling me that he is so superstitious that literally, if he's watching a ball game and his team scores, he'll kind of look at what he did in the minute leading up to it to see.
Yeah, I can get that way with the Cubs and the Bulls. Yeah, that's ridiculous, and I know it's ridiculous, but I've definitely done that. So maybe in those moments, I would say I do that stuff for sure. Like when I'm sitting on this cushion, they're doing well, and when I sit over here, they're not doing well. And yeah, so but all that stuff has proven to be complete rubbish in the end. So I pretty much know it's rubbish throughout, but I think it's just our way of trying to will things to happen.
Absolutely. And to be fair, he's a Cleveland Browns fan, so you know he's got to have hope somewhere.
He's had a lot of practice. Yeah. Well, listen, the Cubs put me through the ringer until 2016 when they finally won one. I mean, that was really all I wanted was like, please God, let the Cubs win one. So I can just go to my grave knowing that they did it and that this wasn't just some torture device placed into my lifetime.
Superb. Now, this sort of is a music question, but what's the best concert you've ever been to that you weren't playing at?
I'd have to go with the first one I ever went to just because of the magic of the whole thing. And you know, my mom let me go to see Iron Maiden when I was a kid. I was in seventh grade, I believe. Pretty young to be going to an Iron Maiden show.
Right.
But I went, I think it was Quiet Riot opening. So that was a great one. And I remember not too long after that going to see the Scorpions. I think that was like the second show I went to on the Love at First Sting tour. I think they called it Live at First Sting on the live album. And that was awesome. And then I remember going to see Ronnie James Dio and being seventh row for that, having great tickets. I had a friend of mine whose mother worked at Ticketmaster or worked in the department store, I think, where Ticketmaster was. And she was able to go get up to the counter before anybody was let in and got us these amazing seats. So that was pretty cool too. That was Twisted Sister opening, I believe. Twisted Sister and Dio.
That was an amazing time, wasn't it? Because as it exactly that kind of period in my life, I was in the same situation. I had a friend that worked at the auditorium in Buffalo, so we were the same. We got to see Scorpions, Rainbow, AC/DC, all of those bands, and looking back now, you almost took it for granted that you just constantly got to see these amazing bands, you know.
Yeah, the Scorpions thing, amazingly enough, Bon Jovi was the opener, which is kind of incredible to think about, right? How much would that be worth these days, a Bon Jovi Scorpions show?
Absolutely.
And the tickets were probably $12 back then.
It's crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy. So if you could, this is a weird question. Well, they're all weird questions, but if you could bring a historical figure back from the dead to talk to, who would it be?
I guess assuming whether or not people believe or not, but you'd have to go with Jesus, right? Because that's got to be the most talked about figure and the most controversial figure.
Yep.
So I'd have to go with that because, we're talking about somebody who performed miracles and stuff. And there's a lot of intrigue around that, right?
Yeah.
Now there's a lot of people that don't believe he ever existed. So if they don't believe that, then, who knows? Then you got to just say, let me see if I can come up with somebody else for you too. Probably just out of fun, I'd say somebody like Babe Ruth and put him into today's baseball game and see, right? If you could bring him back in his prime, how would Babe Ruth fare against the baseball players of today? I think that would be really fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And let's be honest, right? Whether you believe or not, at the end of the day, right? Honestly, who can you top bringing back Jesus? I mean, really, no matter what your feelings are, whether you're religious, whether you have different religious beliefs, I think Jesus probably, for that question, actually probably is the correct answer.
I just think, that would be an amazing thing, right? I mean, it would be extremely controversial even to just prove that he existed, right? So that would seem to be the logical answer. Now, of course, there's people that say, oh, he's a religious nut now that I said that, but not really. I mean, I'm just saying, I think that would probably be my answer in terms of who I'd be most interested in.
Negative thoughts suck. That's the whole reason I created Cope Notes in the first place, to train your brain to think healthier ones. With just one text a day, you can learn to combat stress, loneliness, anxiety, depression, and more. Cope Notes combines peer support, digital journaling, and positive psychology to improve mental and emotional health. We've already helped thousands of people in almost 100 countries around the world start living a happier, healthier life. And now, we want to help you. To try Cope Notes for yourself or share it with a friend, visit www.copenotes.com. In case you missed it, that's www.copenotes.com. Anyway, let's get back to the show.
And funnily enough, that this it's not a question, it's more a kind of a talking point, I suppose. I've actually, a number of times I've considered the question of if in quotes Jesus came back now, how would, or even just somebody claiming to be the Messiah, what would the consideration be? Because the world has changed so much. You know, would the assumption be that he was just a charlatan? You know, would it just be a YouTube prank? You know, it's kind of interesting to know how he would find himself in the world today.
Probably very much like back then, right?
Well,
I think there'd probably be a lot of people that would go, okay, cool, I'm following. And then there would be a crowd of people going, oh, come on, you know.
Yeah.
Get out of here with that. So I think you'd be hard pressed to have anybody come down and claim that and have it be just widely accepted. Would probably be like not likely.
Yeah. Yes, that's very true. So again, quite a tangent. But what does friendship mean to you?
Gosh, I don't know. That's a tough one. I mean, my friends these days, the older I get, because I'm a dad, I have two younger kids. And so most of my time outside of music is spent with them. And my friendship just kind of happens in, I guess, my general interactions of my career with people these days. So maybe not as much importance on that as there used to be in my life. But yeah, man. Just being pleasant with people, I guess, and having them be pleasant in return. I guess it's as simple as that. But I can say that I don't have as close of friends as I used to have when I was a kid. That's more your time before you have a family and before you have a career that kind of consumes a lot of time. So, you know, I mean, nowadays, right? Facebook friends is almost more valuable than real friends, right?
Yeah.
sadly, I'm not saying it's a good thing, but that seems to be the way it is in the world.
Oh, I mean, there's no question. Let's face it. Social media is a double-edged sword, isn't it? It's as simple as that.
For me, I just try and limit it to things that are business. So if I can just post what's happening with my career and avoid being the person who knows more about everything than everybody else, which seems to be the majority of what gets posted. I just try and steer clear of that if I can. Every once in a while, I have my moments of weakness, but in general, I just try and stay away from opinions, things like that on there. It's just, you know, look, man, what do I know anyway? Honestly, is there not enough humility in me to realize I only really know how to play guitar a bit? And even that, I'm not sure that I'm nobody to be talking about all the issues of the world and preaching to people.
Yeah, yeah. And despite actually I've never really done any social media to speak of, I have a kind of a jaded view, which is more the fact of just who I am as a person. I've kind of always had this theory, and I've given this example before, but I kind of, when I do see these posts where somebody kind of posts a picture and says, just made this meal for my beautiful wife, I kind of think to myself, well, as long as she likes it, that's kind of all. You know, I can't kind of get my head around needing thumbs up for something that's very personal in your own personal life. As you say, business, totally different. But on the private side of things, I kind of can't see the necessity for needing that.
Yeah, I'll tell you straight up, though, I have a lot of people that have said, like, you know, well, you know, what good is all that stuff? And I honestly generate a lot of work through it.
Yeah.
I get people all the time that hit me up to play on their stuff. And so I get a lot of sessions. I get a lot of all my guitar students that I'm currently teaching right now. I got from just a single post just saying, hey, you know, I'm going to take students on Skype. And so I think it's just like anything else, right? It's a tool. So if you use it the right way, it can do you a lot of good in your life. And for me, it has. But obviously, there's a destructive side to all of it, too. And I think, you know, it's the Wild West out there, right, as far as data and what they're with AI learning to keep us on. I know I watched that movie, The Social Dilemma. I found that to be really fascinating, those that haven't seen that, just in terms of what the social media apps are using to draw us in and keep us on. And so anyway, like I said, I just try and keep myself at that. Go on, make a post about what's happening business-wise and get off.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I mean, it's, let's face it, as a business tool, you can't be without it. There's no question about that.
I think it does me good. I don't really want to be without it. I mean, I don't really, I'm not one of these people that says, you know, I'm going to delete my account because there's too many posts about politics. It's like, you know, I just don't read everybody's posts.
Yeah.
Just go on and post what you need to post and then get off of there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So again, completely different thing. If you could time travel, would you go forward or back in time?
Oh, I'd rather go back in time. I want to be young, man. You know, I think despite the fact that things have worked out really well in my life, like a great life, I exceeded all expectations, but there's something magical about being young, right? Where you don't know what's going to happen in your life. There's just something brilliant about that.
Yeah.
So I always look back at, when I went out to guitar school in Hollywood when I was a kid, which was really my first time escaping suburban Chicago where I grew up. Right. So going out to Hollywood and being 19 years old out there, that was just a magical time. Like anything could have laid ahead for me at that point. So that was a great feeling, even though back then, I mean, I was working at a recording studio for minimum wage and didn't own a car, riding a bike, didn't have a bed. Sleeping on the ground on blankets, basically in an apartment. So it's pretty amazing to look back at that, and yet somehow I want to go back to that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I completely get that. My wife and I, funnily enough, the first year we met, I had an opportunity to visit the Seven Wonders of the World in a week for a couple of airlines, and. Literally the day before we were due to leave, something happened with the money. I wasn't working at the time. She was doing a part-time job. And I phoned her up and said, are we still going to do this? Because we may not even have anywhere to stay. And she literally, the other end of the phone, she went, fuck it, let's go. And it was kind of like, it's those things that, as you say, you kind of have at that age in life, you're just like, screw it. I'll worry about that when I get to it.
Yeah, I just think... I don't know. For me, I look back on that, how I felt when I was young, and life was just really just, you know, youth is wasted on the young, as they say, right? I mean, it's hard to beat that feeling you have when you're a kid. So those that are younger, enjoy it.
Yes, absolutely. So do you have any kind of musical guilty pleasures, any kind of bands, not necessarily that you shouldn't like, but any bands that you just really like that maybe people wouldn't assume that you do?
Well, I would say a lot of that, a lot of the cheesy pop stuff, you know. I appreciate a good pop song, which a lot of rock musicians are like, how can you like that crap? And I'm like, well, it's well written. I mean, isn't it that stuff that's written by great songwriters? It's just marketed in the sense that it's very cheesy. So all that stuff, especially that 90s stuff that came out, all those, you know, the boy bands and the Britney Spears mm-hmm. and the Christina Aguileras and all that stuff. A lot of that, those are great songs. They're just so I think people would generally assume that someone in my line of work or playing the genre that I'm in would be like, oh, that stuff's crap, you know. But no, I like a lot of that stuff.
Well, I totally agree. I mean, I've well, as we mentioned, I've been a rock and metal fan since day one. But I think the greatest pop song and possibly one of the greatest songs ever written is Gangnam Style by Psy.
Oh, I don't even know what it is. I'm sorry, mate.
Really? The Korean guy? He's a South Korean guy.
Oh, okay. I'm so horribly out of touch, man. I mean, I basically just work on music. And because I work at it so much, I tend not to listen in my free time and go like, no, let me just see what's out there. So I'm, for me, music is like, I use it as my profession, and then when I'm done with my day of work, oh man, it's like just give me a movie or something to take my mind off of it. So I'm out of touch. I haven't heard of the majority of things. So
well, I totally understand that, because even in your genre, there must be so many bands. Because I found that with this podcast, because it's got big very quickly, we've started having a lot of people reach out to us to come on the show, and there's bands I've never even heard of, and then I go and look on Facebook, and they've got a million fans. So
yeah, I know, it's amazing. It's amazing how big. Yeah. Yeah, and I haven't even heard of them. I know. I'm well. Look, I'd be the first to admit out of touch with all that. You know, I'm not, people ask me like, what new bands are you listening to? And I'm like, I literally can't even name one.
Yeah.
I don't even, you know, have one name for you.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. Well, we have one final question, which is the only standard question. And it is, when Joel is no longer walking these wonderful green lands of the world, and he's just a memory, how would you like people to kind of look back on you as a person and think of you?
I want to get through all this, just being able to make a living with my guitar. I mean, that's definitely a goal, just being able to set out. I think musicians these days, we don't necessarily define success by three Ferraris and a mansion.
Yep.
It's more, can we actually get through it without ever having to do anything else? So that would be a beautiful, wonderful thing for me. I'd be really happy with that. And then, I mean, I'd obviously just hope people look back and think I was a good guy. So simple goals, man, you know, just trying, nobody bats 1,000, of course. I mean, none of us are perfect. So there's, do the best in all my interactions with people and hopefully, be a good guy along the way and make a living on my guitar. How about that?
That is perfect. And I have to say, as I said, we've been very lucky with the show. We've had a lot of big people on already. And I can honestly say you have come across as the most down-to-earth person that we've had on the show to date.
Well, should I say something where I'm completely full of myself then? So you blow the whole thing. So I blow the whole thing. Should I say something really pompous and arrogant?
No, honestly, mate, it
was such a struggle for me to get where I got with guitar that there's no, I mean, I have an abundance of humility built up in me because I had it beaten into me. So,
and I
think I got a pretty good grasp on, how blessed we are to have the opportunities. And that's stuff I try to practice daily too and remind myself of and be thankful for. So it's not just like something that every once in a while, like, you know, hey, it's Thanksgiving, like we do in America here, right? It's Thanksgiving. Let's say we're thankful for one day out of 365. I mean, a little ridiculous. So that's something we should be doing on a daily basis. So yeah, I mean, that keeps me grounded for sure. I think the fact that things didn't come easily to me, a lot of the guys in the hard rock scene, they sold millions of albums when they were 19 years old. So
yeah,
their perspective is a little bit different. For me, it was a grind to get to even just being able to make a living and to be doing what I'm doing these days. And so I don't take it for granted for sure.
Well, again, thank you. It's been a real pleasure, and I appreciate your time very much indeed, sir.
Yeah, likewise, bro. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome indeed. So once again, I'd like to thank Joel Hoekstra for being on the show. He was a fantastic and incredibly down-to-earth guest. If you've continued to enjoy these podcasts, please feel free to check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/rockdownpodcast. And of course, you can also find us at www.rockdownpodcast.com. And as we always do, we will leave you with a track from Joel Hoekstra. This is Until I Left You.
past the years that made